This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Clubhouse is a virtual space, an app that launched about a year ago, and it's a product of Silicon Valley. But it's found a particularly powerful niche in China. Jiang Fan, a staff writer at The New Yorker, has been spending a lot of time lately in Chinese language chat rooms in Clubhouse.
Its biggest innovation is the fact that it is based around voice communication. So you launch the app and it immediately shows you this list of rooms that you can join. And you go in there and you can hear actual people talking in real time in their own voice. The conversations often circle to pretty taboo subjects. And those topics are not discussed because people don't like to leave a trail. So hearing in real time Chinese youths discussing subjects that they have never been allowed to discuss in classrooms or even really in, you know, cafes, that's incredibly intriguing and keeps me on there for hours at a time.
Clubhouse is where Jiang came across a woman she's calling Didi.
So if you open up your Clubhouse app, what do you see?
Okay. I'm opening the app. So the first room that I see is ADHD co-working room. Work 45 minutes, chat 15. I don't know what that say about me. tech support, career advice, Q&A for tech workers. And then, yeah, some of the more interesting stuff and occasional chat about Chinese law and politics.
Yep, I'm on that one too.
I'll try to translate this. I'll read the Chinese title and I'll try to translate this. 听了讨论少数民族问题，觉得汉族傻逼太多的人静。 After listening to the room discussion on minority issues, I feel like there are way too many dumbasses amongst the Han Chinese.
Now, to be clear, both Jiang and Didi themselves are Han Chinese, and that is the dominant ethnic group in China. Both have lived in the U.S. for many years. But the chat room Didi is talking about concerns the rights of ethnic minorities, particularly the Uyghurs, who have been subjected to extraordinary persecution by the government. And this is a very dangerous topic in China.
So let me tell you about the first chat room I went into when I joined a Clubhouse. This is actually where I met Didi. She's a moderator in this chat room.
Can I use the Chinese name for that room? I can use the Chinese name and then I'll translate to English. Called Xinjiang Yougezhongying, which says there's a concentration camp in Xinjiang ?
There are about 12 million Uyghurs who are mostly Muslim, and it's believed that a million of them are currently detained in concentration camps, or what the Chinese state say are re-education camps.
So I saw the title of the room. I was like, okay, there is so many ways that this can go down. I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that in a country with such strict speech control, like China, conversation about Uyghur camps are still happening, but mostly in private. So there's two types of conversations that people are roughly having about what is going on. Either that people are trying to piece together the facts based on something they read on Twitter, something read on Weibo, heavily censored bits of information on Weibo. And then another part where people would try to rationalize this atrocity that they seem to be witnessing by coming up with a narrative. Most likely, they would want to choose a narrative that would make them feel good. So I think the first 30 minutes of the conversation, that's what people were mostly doing. What we quickly realized is that Clubhouse as a platform has the opportunity to be more than that. This is a very fleeting window to have the possibility to have like thousands of people actually sit down and listen to Uyghurs who actually live through this, who are still separated from their loved ones. And then that's when the moderators start to step in and be proactive in terms of saying that we might have the opportunity to actually listen to people who experienced this. We want to amplify their voices. So if you are battling denial or if you're going through different phases of emotions, that's your own homework. But do your best to listen and do your best to be respectful.
Is there an example or was there a moment in your many, many hours of moderating that was particularly uncomfortable or that made a particularly deep impression on you?
So one person came up. So basically after one lady shared that, her cousin's experience of being like the hunger that she experienced, a Chinese girl stepped up and said, well, can you give me a little bit more about like why does she got in? Like why was it her? Why wasn't it everybody else?
Mm.
And then I feel like the room just took a deep collective breath in. It's like, why did you say that? Why would you say that? And yeah, and then the Uyghur lady took it like a champ. She said, like, I do not appreciate these questions because it made me feel like we are responsible for what the crimes that we're experiencing, but I'll give you the reason. And then she offered an explanation. But what I noticed was the girl who asked the question, after she asked the question, she left the room.
That moment when you said that there was this collective intake of breath, and this is, you know, 5,000 people in a single room listening to a voice, how did you feel as a moderator? Could you feel this temperature change in the room when there are these moments of conflict or of, you know, verbal denial?
Yeah, I think start at the beginning of the room, there was a lot more denial. So most of the times, if you're Han Chinese, you when you're watching a video of a Uyghur talking about his or her experience or her family's experience in a concentration camp, there's always an English voiceover.
Mm.
And then that makes it so much easier to fall into denial because, oh, it's the Western media who they are trying to portray China into as some sort of like a political devil type of situation. On the other, so in Clubhouse, these people are speaking Mandarin. It sounds like that person sounds like your friend, your neighbor. You immediately recognize his Northwestern accent because you went to college with somebody from that region. It was so, like, the distance closed up so quickly. You can almost feel like a lot of people are immediately drawn in. That connection is built, like, at that moment. After some of the personal stories were shared, I think that was one of the reasons why this was such a phenomenal experience because it forced people into a long overdue sense of empathy.
Mm.
It almost like dragged all 5,000 people over the hill of denial that you wouldn't be able to climb by yourself.
Now, a bunch of young Chinese people talking openly about the government's persecution of the Uyghurs, that's got to sound like Xi Jinping's worst nightmare. Is the Chinese government aware of what's going on in Clubhouse, and are they doing anything to stop it?
I think that everyone had been anticipating some kind of a crackdown. And in early February, it came from Beijing. Many people cited that they had trouble logging onto the app, and it was considered somewhat of a soft ban because only some people were experiencing it, and the way that the ban was being meted out was confusing, but nevertheless, people had significant trouble logging onto the app, and it's expected that the ban will only be extended in the coming days and weeks.
But it seems to me that the Chinese government always gets better and better at controlling social media, that it's a matter of time that it'll be very, very difficult for residents of China to deal with Clubhouse. Am I wrong?
Not at all. But there is a pattern, you see, where those who are interested in free expression, you see them, you know, also growing more cunning in the way that they deal with censors and how quick they are to seize these opportunities to speak.
So after Clubhouse is banned, I first start notice, you know, people are sharing how to get on. So basically, like, do not ever log off from your Chinese phone, because if you log off from your phone, you wouldn't be able to get the two-factor authentication.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, do that. It's the five steps you have to go through. And then this is the VPN we recommend. But if it's too expensive for you, it's the next best option. Yeah, it was, like, full-on step-by-step WikiHow tutorials of how to do it. I think this really speaks to the nature of, like, public discourse in China, is that it's a constant dance with censorship. Part of the game of self-expression is trying to find a gap to express through. And Clubhouse was definitely one of them.
Jiang, as a reporter and as someone who is intensely interested in what's going on in China, how valuable is this to you?
Given the dearth of spaces where you can hear Chinese people talk honestly, candidly about the most taboo of political and social subjects, even having the brief window of a few days or weeks where you can hear these conversations, you know, that's the dream. I mean, you are really getting a sense of what people are thinking in the privacy of their hearts.
You reckoning about your nation's original sin, try to figure out what that means to you as a person, is something that, I mean, like, American audience would be pretty familiar with. Living here as a Chinese diaspora, I would almost, like, look at these conversations that people are having during BLM, the United States versus
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, the Black Lives Matter movement last summer, as a sense of longing. Like, I wish we have something like that. You know, I wish we have this public space where you can talk about your doubts. You can, you feel like, how do I be a good person as a Han Chinese, where such atrocities are being conducted in your name, in a sense, in your interest. Yes, maybe you're already a bad person by being complicit. And then when you start to, like, think hard about these issues and start to talk to people around you about these issues and humble ourselves and start to learn about them and talk to people about them, Clubhouse as one of the public forums that allows this still. And maybe that's where people can start to build, you know, some sort of narrative of how, as a Han Chinese, how do you live? How do you behave? How do you help people? You feel people coming up just, you know, guns blazing. I have shed every bit and piece of self-censorship, and I will scream like Xi Jinping for 5 minutes until everybody gets uncomfortable.
Everyone is very eager to get the mic. And in a room where everyone is, at least in the rooms that I have attended, where everyone seems to have waited at least, you know, 7 hours to speak.
Yeah, one guy was like, you have no idea how hot my phone is at this moment. Like,
many people had battery issues. Everyone was, like, down to, like, 2% and was like, please let me speak before I go down to 1%.
And I'm from New York. I'm a millennial. The person went off and I was like, there you go. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Didi, for spending even more time in front of the screen, but it's been terrific to have you.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Happy Chinese New Year, by the way.
Happy Chinese New Year to you. Happy Year of the Ox.
The New Yorker's Jiang Fan. She spoke with a woman we're calling Didi, who lives in the U.S., but whose family is in China, and she didn't want us to use her full name.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.